At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And D, today we're going to have a discussion about the Lakers playoff rotation, but I want to start it with a little bit of chess. One of the many things I like about chess is it's got so many terms that are just so extra for what they are, right? You don't make a mistake or screw up in chess. You blunder. And there are all sorts of terms like that. And one of them is fianchetto. To fianchetto is a tactic that you use with your bishop. If you're not familiar with chess, the bishops are the pieces that can move diagonally as far as they want until they run into something. But the bishop is not able to defend itself particularly well. It is vulnerable. You can be right in front of it, right to the side of it, or right behind it. And so long as you aren't diagonal to it, you can threaten it and take it. And so a bishop, which is often referred to in chess slang as a sniper or a shooter, has to be protected. And so to fianchetto your bishop is to sort of hide your bishop in a little cubbyhole of pawns that is protected in front and on each side. And then the bishop itself takes care of the diagonals. And what it provides is sort of this long range threat throughout the game. There's this sniper hiding in a little nest way off on one side of the board that if you forget about it or if you're not paying attention to it, it's going to really hurt you and is constantly putting pressure from a distance. But it needs to be protected in the first place. And that got me thinking about Luke Kennard and the Lakers and the playoff rotation and all of that. I have loved watching Kennard's effect on the Lakers offense. But just like in chess and in so many instances, the shooter needs to be protected with defenders around them. And I would argue that one of the key moments of last year's playoff series that the Lakers lost was when Jackson Hayes showed to Redick that he couldn't stay on the floor. At least that was Redick's determination, that he couldn't stay on the floor, and sort of the secondary effects of that. So I wanted to talk about Jackson, Jake, and Kennard in this pod and sort of keeping them in the playoff rotation as much as possible. We could extend this out to Vando and Kleba if you'd like to as well, D. But that's something that I feel like we've got six guys that are going to play in pretty much every series, no matter who we play. That's the starters with Austin, Luka, LeBron, DA, and Marcus, along with Rui. Now, there are going to be some teams that are better for one guy or another, but I think all six of those guys will be in every series that the Lakers could potentially play. Keeping those other guys on the floor and effective, though, I think will be one of the keys to as far as the Lakers can go. So curious about your thoughts on this topic.
This is a super interesting discussion because I'm wondering where JJ's head is at in terms of the idea that you just represented, which is the decision he made on Jackson last year. When JJ talked about regrets from that series, none of it really came down to his rotation or who ended up playing or not playing. He spoke more about tactical mistakes things that he would have done different tactically over the course of the series. He talked about planning things he would have possibly changed in terms of how much he practiced, what the focus was heading into the playoffs, but not a lot about how the rotation got whittled down and whittled down to the point where he was really only playing 5.5 guys by the end of that series. And for all of the praise that I think JJ deserves this regular season, I thought he was an excellent regular season coach last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm encouraged by the growth that he's made this regular season, but I also think the Lakers' performance and his performance is about what I actually expected from him or what I would have hoped for from him this regular season. The playoffs are a different animal from the context of planning and decision-making and the constant war of attrition that happens over the course of playing a single team over and over and over again. Your framing of protecting the players and what I think goes into making the players effective, I also think that there's a way to discuss this topic from another side, which is coach decision-making and what he does and does not value in terms of extending his starters and how much he feels like he needs to put into or invest into players 7, 8, and 9 in a playoff rotation in order to buttress the real strengths of your team, which are likely your top 5 or 6 guys. I can make individual arguments for each of the players on why I think they should play regardless of how effective they are and how good we are at protecting them. Because I would argue, Pete, that the Lakers starters need a certain amount of protecting and insulating from too much of a load, from doing too much of the dirty work, which I would argue in Jake's and Jackson's cases, their motor and their ability to play fast. Jake's not an athlete, but the thinking part of his game and the physicality that he brings and the motor that he plays with is important. And I would argue that Jackson's speed, just getting up and down the court and ability to run and run and run from a big man position is super important. I think Kennard brings something very similar to those players, but from an offensive perspective. I do agree with you that their overall effectiveness is going to matter greatly for the Lakers' overall success, but I would argue that they need to play regardless, and that's like a JJ Redick idea as much as it is a schematic idea. So I'm very interested in having this larger conversation with you because I think there's multiple angles to have this conversation from.
I totally agree with this, and yeah, the Lakers, you know, we've got an outside chance at this. And in order for that outside chance to hit, they're going to need all of those guys to be able to be consistent contributors and have them be played off the floor, so to speak, as minimally as possible. And so I'd love to start that conversation from the coach's perspective. I think you make a great point that some of this is choice. A lot of this is choice from the coach's perspective. Redick could have just as easily gone to, oh, well, Jackson, you're not a starter in this series, but we're going to make sure you play the five in these Julius Randle and Naz Reid groups. And that's something that with Jackson in particular, as we look toward the playoffs and the first round or two, it's looking like Houston in the first round is a good possibility. And in the second round, a good possibility of it being Wemby. And there's a certain amount of Jackson can get ragdolled by bigger front courts and things like that, that I think that they're going to need the right application of all of these guys. Because I think that's the overall point with Jake, Luke, and Jackson is there's a right way and a right time to use them. And then there's a time where they're actually going to be a detriment to you, and knowing when and what to do, which move against which team. It's a different equation, D, than determining for the regular season, like, oh, Jackson's my backup and he's going to come in at this time in all 82 or as much of them as possible versus a, hey, this is actually the equation against this team and maybe we need him to play 24 minutes or maybe this is a bad matchup for him and he's closer to 14. And determining that as early as possible is one of Redick's challenges.
I totally agree. One of the things that I will point to with Jackson specifically, because he's the one player that we're talking about right now who was on last year's team. One of the challenges that I think Minnesota posed specifically for Hayes was that they ended up being way more comfortable switching than what I thought anyone thought would be the case heading into the playoff series against the Lakers. I think people saw the defensive foundation of Gobert and the offensive foundation of Luka, and the idea of, well, Minnesota's not going to want to switch Gobert onto Luka over and over and over again. And I think what ended up happening was they didn't do it on every possession, but they proved comfortable enough doing it that Jackson then, his role as a role and dive man in the pick and roll got way more limited. And he didn't carve out any other ways besides Mike Conley, a very physical Minnesota team, to be active on the offensive glass or make an impact in these other areas around the rim because he wasn't strong enough. And so have you seen improvements specifically in Jackson's game to beat those specific sorts of coverages so that he could stay on the court? Because this bridges the coaching idea that I was talking about and the sort of protecting the player and the schematic changes, what the player can actually do in order to, quote unquote, stay on the court. So let's take a break here, Pete. And when we come back, I'd love to get your thoughts on that idea around Jackson.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
I have seen improvement from Jackson on that front. The degree to which there's been improvement is something we're going to find out in these playoffs. Remember, one of the first things he said on Media Day was, I gained about 15, 20 pounds of strength. And I think that's been very noticeable throughout the course of this season, D. And one of the ways to beat that specific coverage, because you're right, if a team is able to switch, it really reduces the ability that your lob threat fives have to get multiple opportunities. You can really cut down on how many alley-oops you give up. This is something very important against the Lakers team that I think is the league leader in alley-oops. And really, over the last many years, they've thrown more alley-oop lobs than most. And so that capacity to switch, I think, is super important. It's also one of the realms that Luka and, to a lesser extent, Austin are really responsible for getting them out of. Luka was okay against beating switches last year. This year, it's not just switches, but just isolation in general, especially since January 1st. He's getting like 1.2 points per possession on his ISOs. That he's supposed to be the switch beater in one respect. But on the other end of the play, and this is something that we've gotten some production from DeAndre Ayton, who I think is a better fit against switching coverages. You've got the big matched up with the guard that switched onto them. Can you out-muscle them? Last year with Jackson against Minnesota, that's, unless it's Mike Conley, who's scrappy in his own way, right? But unless it's him, it's like, that's Jackson, but he's wrestling with Anthony Edwards or Jaden McDaniels or somebody who's got some size to them as well, that he couldn't really overpower them the way that even a DA can, right? When he gets switched on and can tap boards to himself. But Jackson's been better at that this year, D. He has gotten more wins in that respect. He's also been a really good shot blocker over the last month, month and a half as well, where this is something I've noticed in the three seasons that he's been with us. He's always been a fingernail away from certain blocks that he reads it. He just reads it a split second too early. And there's always been a certain amount of, if he just reads that quick little beat. He's so close. He's going to get to those. And that's finally just started to happen. And so the switching stuff, that is going to, that is always going to be somewhat of a natural weakness of his, if nothing else, in that it neutralizes a strength of his, in that he's going to get fewer lob opportunities. But I do think he's got the strength to win more of the physical battles against mismatches than he used to. And I think he's just reading the play a beat quicker on both ends of the floor in ways that can really produce great results.
To your point about the rebounding stuff, his offensive rebound rate is up almost 2 percentage points from what it was last year. That may not sound like a huge, huge amount, but going into Monday's game, Hayes has played about 30 more minutes than what he played last season. And he's already grabbed 16 more offensive rebounds this season than he did last year in only 30 more minutes total.
Wow.
His effectiveness just on the offensive glass to me has really stood out. And in the same way that you've talked about since like the turn of the year or after the All-Star break, that his shot blocking has been a lot better, I've seen his offensive rebounding be a lot better as well. Mm-hmm. One of the things that he's able to do because he's such a good leaper is when he's not being fended off, he has the ability to jump and second jump in ways where it's like he can go over the top of a lot of guys. He's got good length and he is an excellent leaper, even from a standstill position. What was happening to him in previous seasons, though, is he was just getting pushed back and ridden off of his spot in ways where he wasn't able to use his athleticism at all. Like, I know as two guys who were not on the tall side when we played basketball, one of the ways that we were taught to play down low and rebound and sandwich rebound against big players is drive them down low. Like, you've got the leverage advantage, sit on their legs.
That's right.
Make it so that they can't jump and drive them backwards. And I think one of the things that Hayes has been much better at with this strength improvement is just holding his ground just a little bit better and making it so that guys aren't moving him as well, particularly smaller players. Bigger players are still going to be able to leverage him. He hasn't put on so much weight that a big guy like Steven Adams, who obviously isn't playing right now, but even like a Şengün or
Goga,
a Jokic, or there's guys who are just of that ilk that are just going to move him around. But his athleticism against guards and wings is just better, and he weighs more and he's stronger. I expect him to be better in these ways, Pete. And so I do think that his improvement in these areas is going to make him a steadier playoff performer. I do agree with you that there's a range and certain matchups are going to be worse for him. That should impact his role, and that's where the coaching part comes in. But I think from his side of the equation and what he could have done to help improve his own chances to survive out there, I think that he's done a fair amount of that to be helpful against a variety of defensive coverages that the Lakers are very likely to see.
And one last thing on that point about what he can control, there's a certain keeping his head about him, keeping his wits about him, that I would even apply to Redick as well, that he, I thought, lost his cool a bit in that series, and that's when he starts fouling all the time and getting obsessed with the refs in his own way, and his inability to sort of keep his head about him, I thought, was a big part of why he couldn't play and why Redick arrived at that point, is that he got frustrated and started reverting back to a lot of habits that I still see that tendency in Jackson from time to time, where he just kind of loses his cool. That's going to be one of the big measures of his playoffs.
I also think that last year as the starter, that mattered so much more.
So much more.
And that it's right from the get-go. You have to be sharp right from the opening tip. And I do think easing his way into games from a bench role is just a much better spot for him overall. I want to pivot, though, away from Jackson Peet and start talking about one of the other guys. And that's Jake LaRavia. We talked about Jake the other day. And I think we both have an affinity for him, his style of play, just his competitive nature, and the way that he gets after it, possession after possession. Jake is one of those players where that's why I think there's a role for him, irrespective of whether or not his shot is going in. But if his shot is not going in, it does allow for teams to defend the Lakers differently. There's this domino effect that happens, particularly in a playoff matchup, where you do start to get squeezed more and more and more. And if you can't compensate for that by beating those coverages in some way, shape, or form, then that is how you get, quote unquote, played off of the court. Mm-hmm. So where are your concerns around Jake? And do you see him breaking through and being steady, irrespective of whether or not the jumper is going down?
I can't say that. I don't know. I think that we're going to find that out. I have similar concerns with Jake about keeping his head about him, but it's more a confidence thing. Keep your confidence, keep your head up. Don't get down on yourself. Don't pass up all of these wide open shots that you're going to get. Now, that's something that I want to start there, that by the time we get to the playoffs, we've got this Lakers team that's really started to click on the offensive end, that those players that can get into the upside down as jump shooters where you leave them all alone, all by themselves, and they still miss. Marcus can have some nights like this, but I think that that's going to be a 1-in-4 games type of thing. That's usually what it is with him. Jake, it can be a little more frequent, and I think Jake can get to the point where he gets so down on himself where it's like the eyes aren't even going toward the rim when he catches the ball in the first place, and other defenses will scheme toward that. I also think he's hugely important toward any small ball looks that the Lakers go toward. Whenever you go toward a centerless group, you'd need a certain level of physicality and rebounding, and you're talking earlier about how he's not the greatest athlete, and I agree, but he's not a bad one, and he's also very big for his position. That was one of our first impressions from seeing him. Like, for that perimeter type of position, he's a very physical player with strength and size, and he uses it, right? He's a very forward, downhill type of player that I think when the Lakers do go small and they've got four other guys on the court, at least they can hit a jump shot, it knocks down some of the harm that can come from him not being able to take that shot. But D, it's still going to matter at the end of the day. His ability to take and make that shot is going to matter quite a bit. But I do think that he's one of our dogs. I view him in the same category as Marcus and Vando and Jackson. Those are the quartet really that I see in the Lakers rotation or adjacent to it in Vando's case that are really responsible for that. And Jake just has a level of reliability from I know his motor is going to be there every night, his size and his activity and all of that. But he is going to have to either make those shots or take those shots or find a way to contribute on offense, because I think that is what's going to play him off the floor, especially if he gets down on himself.
Let's take our second break here, Pete, because I do want to talk about LaRavia and the open jump shot and the psychology of it all.
Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or dsw.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Why have I asked my electrician I found on Angie.com to bury my pet hamster Nibbles in our yard for me? Because I was so moved by how carefully he buried my electrical wires, I knew I could trust him to bury my sweet Nibbles after his untimely end. Nibbles. Gone too soon. May he scurry in peace.
Hey, sorry about your pet, but I just wire stuff.
Nibbles would have loved you like a brother.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
This is where I'm intrigued about the idea of what happens when a defense leaves you all alone. And whether or not that's going to happen to Jake is, I think, whether or not he hits one or two. LaRavia has a history of being a good enough shooter that I'm very interested to see what opposing coaches do in terms of how they treat him as a shooter. Jake's been a bad shooter. point blank. He's 31.7% on 3 3-point attempts a game. He's like been worse as a catch and shoot player than he has as a pull-up player, but it's marginal just because so many of his attempts are of the catch and shoot variety. The ultra, ultra wide open shots.
Those are the ones.
Mm-hmm. Those are the ones where it's just like he's only shooting 30.7% on those. And those are the majority of his looks. The ones where he's open, which is 4 to 6 feet, he's shooting 36.8%. So again, though, the vast majority of his shots are wide open shots. And I'm just going to be very interested to see if Laravia ends up getting the we're going to guard you with our centers idea. Because if they do that, I'll then be very interested to see what the Lakers' counters are. Laravia is a much better overall offensive player than some of the previous we're going to let our centers guard you guys, right? Now, I don't think he's as good an offensive player as like Alex Caruso is, for example, because I think Caruso's shooting is a bit steadier, but Denver tried to defend Caruso last season with Jokic. And basically what OKC started doing was, well, we're used to this. We're just going to put Caruso in these screen actions. And if you get Caruso into the pocket where he could play downhill 4-on-3, he grew up playing guard. Like, he's good at all of that stuff. Laravia, similarly, has enough ball handling and decision-making ability to, like, play in the pocket and do some other stuff. It's just not something the Lakers have done with him very much this season because they haven't put centers on him pretty much at all. Like, the Lakers have had a center on the court so often that it's just like, okay, well, no, we don't have to do this. But that's where I'm wondering. He's either going to have to show that he could hit the wide open three, or he's going to be a screener a fair amount more. Sure. And I'm wondering where the coaching goes with this, Pete, but I'm of the mind he plays too hard and is good at like the things that make the Lakers defense good, especially lately, which is forcing turnovers, getting deflections, getting steals. He's a good sandwich rebounder. He does all of these like margins things that I think that if he is not playing at all, you start to lose on the margins in so many ways that are going to impact your overall floor as a team that I get it. When the three's not falling, we're going to be like, ah, damn it, Jake. Like, that's got to go in. But I also think when he's diving on the ground for loose balls, we're going to be like, yes, exactly that. And there's got to be a balance there because I think he's going to have to play.
If he's not playing because his shot is spotty, I think we lose a lot of the basketball version of offensive and defensive line play. Like Jake, I think, is very much representative of that. Another thing that we lose if a guy can't play is Kennard. Let's go back to that Bishop, to that shooter.
Yeah.
The Lakers' offensive leap forward in many ways coincided with the acquisition of Luke Kennard. I felt like they've taken a great step forward, especially in the middle of plays, in mid-play action, in part because of Kennard's ability to not only shoot, but to drive and kick and to keep the wheel going in ways that I know can annoy people when he's swinging it from himself being semi-open to a wide-open Vando. It's like, shoot the ball, dog. But I do think that he has really facilitated a style of play with the bench groups, especially. The bench was so bad prior to his acquisition, especially as scorers. Then that between him and then Rui going to the bench, the Lakers are winning games now, not only just at the start of the game, but in those other minutes. But I watch him defend with the physicality of a bit of tissue paper sometimes, and I'm like, this is going to be bad come playoff time, and teams are definitely going to pick on it. So talk to me about how we keep Kennard on the court.
He's the one that needs defensive protection more than anyone else. In a playoff environment where the Lakers, if they're not switching 1 through 5, they're very likely switching perimeter screen actions, Kennard's going to get picked on. In lineups where he might be on the court with Luka and with Austin, which that very well could happen, Pete, do I think that Austin's still going to get some possessions gone at him? Sure. Just like I think Luka will as well. But Kennard's the guy that's going to be like, no, 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 no. Bring him into the fold, make him hedge and recover, or make him switch. And let's see if we can go through his chest the way that honestly teams tried to target Austin with. The thing I will say is that if he's the only guy that you're really able to go through him and he's like not even going to stand in there to try to take a charge, That's the difference I've seen with Austin going back to like previous seasons to what he's doing back again now, which is Austin's going to stand in there and he's going to fight you for that position. Now, is he going to give up some on certain plays on certain? Sure. But overall, Pete, Austin's level of fight is so much higher now.
So much
and
higher.
Luka is a big and strong player that you can't go through him that same way. That if Kennard is just going to give up space, I think that he needs to be protected with like backline defense that's really stepping up for him. And I'm not exactly sure how that's going to go for the Lakers. Like, I think they're going to have to peel switch more. They're going to have to really account for it, play more zone. It's like, this is where I think J.J. is going to have to coach it up way more than what we've talked about to any degree with like Jackson and Jake in terms of what their utility is, because Kennard really does need the guys behind him.
This is a whole conversation, a whole separate conversation I'd like to have with you, but I think it speaks to some of the decisions that Redick is going to have to make in terms of personnel groupings. And so I view Kennard, Austin, and Jackson as our speed players in the rotation. The game against Orlando that we won recently on the Kennard game winner, all three of those players were fantastic throughout the game. The speed of all three of those players is really what won the game against Orlando. And I think that there are going to be teams, even in the cluster that we're talking about of Houston and OKC, San Antonio, all these top six playoff teams in the West, where the Lakers being able to counter with a bit of speed is going to be hugely important. But I also think there are going to be some times where it's like, Luke is the least physical of them all. We know Austin has some issues with players going through his chest. And this is something we were just talking about with Jackson as well. All three of those guys play together a decent amount in the back half of the first and third quarters. That is one of my concerns and one of the places that I see for Redick having to potentially adjust is that if there are lineups that, oh, collectively, we don't have enough physical strength on the floor and we're getting kind of pushed around by a Houston team that's just looking to grab offensive rebounds, for example, those are going to be the minutes and the times to be able to do that. And so with Kennard, it's about keeping him on the perimeter. One of the ways you can do that is if we ever do plan on running two on the ball type of stuff, that's a way to hide a bad defender in some ways, is have them trap the ball. Trap and rotate. But one of the things I worry about with Kennard is not only him being attacked in isolation, which he will be a lot of, but also if he gets switched onto somebody around the basket, shot goes up, he's not going to compete on the boards. He's not going to put a body on somebody in a way that they feel it. If you get too many of those guys under the basket, you're already going to have like Luka dealing with guys who can jump super high as he boxes out around the rim. Austin's going to be stuck on a switch. Marcus can't jump very high. We actually don't have a lot of guys who can jump from a dead stop. I think that keeping Kennard away from the interior of the paint defensively is going to be important.
It is going to be important. What's also going to be important, though, is what he does offensively and just the gravity that he has. This is where I think JJ probably sees a fair amount of himself in Kennard. We see it just based off of the plays that get run for him. And I think JJ is also going to understand, so it's like, well, this is how I got picked on. These were my own liabilities that I had to deal with, and this is what I would have needed to be protected. The one thing I wanted to close on, Pete, is though this overall idea of your 7, 8, and 9 players, the amount that they need to play is going to go way down from what we've seen during the regular season.
Good point.
And I think it's important that we frame this properly, even though we put a whole pod into this discussion right now about keeping them on the floor and keeping them on the floor. Keeping them on the floor is very likely at most for two shifts for each of these players. It's finding a 6 to 7 minute stretch each half that you feel like these guys can play for you and help you win minutes as part of a functional lineup. And that's it. Because as Luka's going to be flirting with 38 to 40 minutes a night, Austin's going to be in the 38 to 40 minute a night range, and LeBron is going to be in the 36 to 40 minute a night range. Honestly, that's just where it's going to be. And I would argue that just based off of role, Jackson as being like the, I'm only a center, and I back up a guy who's only a center, that he's got the chance to play the most minutes per night out of any of these guys. But I don't expect Kennard to be playing 20 minutes a night in the playoffs. I don't expect Jake to be playing 20 minutes a night in the playoffs. If they get a third shift a game, honestly, it might surprise me. Luke might get that in the fourth quarter if like the game's going a certain way, but you know what I mean?
I totally do. And one thing, this actually gives is a case for optimism for me, because I think if you view them all together, if a game isn't a Luke game, I think there's going to be a good chance that it is a Jake game, just because they're different enough in what they provide that if the game isn't a DA game, I think it is going to be a Jackson game or vice versa, right? Those guys that can push around Jackson have a much harder time doing that with a larger human being in DA. So collectively, I like how they fit together.
This is the point that came up and that you made after the Magic game, is that it's not just Jake and Luke, it's like Luke and Rui.
Yeah.
Right? Where they both do very similar things offensively. They have different roles defensively, and they're of totally different size and athletic caliber, right? One's also a speed player versus one being more of like a bigger, like powerish player.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, you know,
power shooter,
calling Rui a power
yeah, yeah.
player is
yeah, yeah.
you know what I'm saying. But as a 6'8 guy who's like 230, 240, it's just like, yeah, he's got some of that to him for sure. But the ability to say, okay, well, this might not be a Luke game, but it's a Rui game. This might not be mm-hmm. as much of like Jake can play some for Marcus here because we need more of a forward version of this, like a bigger play, right? This is the thing that's probably a whole nother pod for itself, but like the overlapping and the Venn diagram nature of the Lakers role players, I think is super interesting
yep.
when you look at who their centers are, who their sort of defensive aces are, who the shooters are, and how you can mix and match the different archetypes of players between a Jake and a Marcus or a Rui and a Luke.
Yep.
Jackson and Ayton, and how they can be deployed in specific matchups against specific groupings on the other team to say, this is what's going to work best for us here. And you surround your stars with these guys, Pete, and if the stars continue to play the way that the stars have played, this is also a case for optimism. It's
yep.
it's like we just spent a whole pod talking about guys 7, 8, and 9, but guys 1, 2, and 3 are where the Lakers' chances lie.
Of
you
course.
Know what I mean? And 7, 8, and 9 are going to be able to do their job a whole lot easier if players 1, 2, and 3 are doing their job to a high level.
Absolutely. It should be fun to watch all of this play out. We are back at it tonight against the Wizards. Luke is suspended for tonight, but come join us on the Offside chat, now available on Android, offside.gg/beta. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about how it went, more Lakers. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score. 2, 1,
miss it!
Unbelievable.
You're the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really?